Welcome to another episode of Rolling Imperfection, the podcast for players and game masters to design perfect characters through imperfection. We cover all forms of game design, from interesting and engaging backstory creation to campaign and NPC development. Enjoy, remember to play what you love, and may your characters do something epic.
Welcome back to Rolling Imperfection, the podcast for making your story-driven campaigns better. I'm Kevin.
I'm Steve.
And it's been a little bit, huh?
Yeah, it has been a little bit. Not for the listeners.
No, but not for the listeners. Yeah, they're like, you release an episode every week. And we're like...
Consistently.
We're like, oh yeah, huh? Seems that way to you guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, updates. We killed the feral hogs.
We did.
Or rather, you guys killed the feral hogs.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had a brilliant plan that did not go well. And I completely regret doing it in every way possible.
Yeah, and then you retreated early.
No, I think that was right about time when I ran out of spells and I was at, 11 HP and most of our other companions were at really low HP. And so I was like, well, it's time to use Fog Cloud and get the fuck out, I think. There was no reason for us to like really fight those hogs. So it made sense.
But how would you have gotten Monster's character, Rusty, out of that?
I used the last spell to bring her up. She could have ran.
Okay.
Yeah.
It was just amusing to me because that hog was nearly dead. But
Well, yeah, but we didn't have a way of knowing that.
True.
Yeah. So that, and it makes sense for my character. My character is very, he's much more selfish and wants to live than a lot of my other characters who are more selfless. Plus, I still don't really know these people, so.
Fair enough. We are on, would that be the third?
I've known them for less than 48 hours at that point.
True. But yeah, I have no idea how those monsters are supposed to be like CR5.
Yeah, no, especially when they have laser eyes that if you fail by more than 5, you instantly die. What?
Yeah, for most level 5 characters, yeah, you insta-die.
Yeah, that's just not... Does not sound fair. Or do they normally come in pairs, or did you just put two of them there?
No, I put two of them there and depowered them.
Okay.
Slightly. I removed the insta-death because that's no fun, even though you guys have resurrection powder. But
it's not resurrection powder, it's reincarnation powder.
Sorry.
That's different.
I know what it does. Different. I always get the R word wrong.
No, it's
synonyms.
Fine,
but... That's what happened. This is what happens when you know too many words. And you have to pick out like a specific one and you're like, I don't know. It's like a bunch. You're probably going to pick wrong. I don't know.
Sometimes I think you're just trying to like make us forget so that we use it. And then someone turns into a gnome.
Say that like it's a bad thing.
I mean, in all honesty, if this goes anything like our previous Silent Spiral campaign, then we'll probably just end up using it to torture someone.
Yeah.
Kill him, reincarnate him. It's like, well, you came back as an elf this time. You might not be so lucky.
So it happens in gritty noirs.
Yep. From your heroes?
Yeah, heroes. What, I can't remember who. Someone was like, oh yeah, no, this won't explode. And I'm like, I wouldn't put money on that.
Oh yeah, I can't remember who said that. But yeah, you had like these like wires coming out of this box. They're like, oh yeah, let's just cut them all. And I'm like, oh god. Well, I'm thankful that I was messing with, the shotgun trap to take the shotgun out of the shotgun trap. But if I was there, I would have just been like, well, if we'd sever the wire, any of the wires that, you know, something happens, then why don't we just connect all the wires together and make a loop and then cut the thing from the wall? That's what I would have done anyway, or what I would have suggested as the artificer.
Well, I said that Trong could have done that, but he
didn't.
Oh,
he did? He didn't decide to do it? Oh, okay.
No. I was like...
I missed that part.
Well, you can like alter and make like an electricity loop so that the feed feels like it's never interrupted. And
yeah.
He's like, no, I want Monster's character to pull it out of the wall. And I was like, well, it's a good thing that is not a bomb.
Yep. Yeah, it is.
So yeah, that was fun. Traps. Got to do some foreshadowing. That doesn't mean anything to your characters, but it means everything to your players.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a whole bunch about that session that was just super sus, but yeah.
Oh, literally everything about that was super sus.
Oh, yes. Anyway, we should probably get onto our topic.
Yeah, Fitzbaum's Treasury of Dragons comes out like next week, and we are like blindsided by it because it feels like we just did the other one.
We did just do one.
But we will once again try to have that for you by Friday. And yeah.
Indeed. So this is your topic. And you're like, oh, yeah, world building is overrated. And I say, how dare you, sir? You have a world anvil? What do you mean? Explain yourself, sir.
I do have a world anvil. I don't spend all my time there, though.
Well, yeah, I mean, you probably, a person could, to be honest. There's a lot that you can do with that site.
And that's kind of my point.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so do your hot topic.
I mean, we don't get to like, I mean, I guess, okay. So the spicy take, the extra spicy take that they've already read in the title. And probably, I don't know, we'll see. The spicy take is that world building is overrated. And I generally won't get around to my reasons for that till the end of the record. So there.
The suspense, just like a true GM.
True. yeah, it's it'll be present throughout. So I kind of want to build my case first, you know, because A, I feel like people might be disappointed when I get to it, but this was inspired by someone saying having a long backstory doesn't mean you have a good character, which is true, and something that it's like you wanna put like a limit, but then it can go way too far, right? Or it can be insubstantial.
How do you differ insubstantial from
too far?
Yeah, like what way do you mean insubstantial? You mean like without like actual like content?
So if your backstory is just a bunch of stuff that happens, no offense.
Oh, like Rodolfo the Third.
Yes, exactly like that. It was just my character had all this stuff happen to them. And like, that's it. Does it reflect on them? Doesn't say really how they are or how they act or give a hint at it, which to be fair, I think is somewhat hard. And oftentimes when we go to play our characters, even when we had one idea for them going into things, it often changes when we're like actually in the setting because the setting feels a little different than we thought. The atmosphere goes a little differently, right?
Yeah.
But there are some characters where you read the backstory and you go, I still basically don't know anything about this character. I know a bunch of things that have happened to them, but I don't know really, really that much. And I feel like that is most of what I need to say about that, because we've done episodes on backstory, right?
Yes.
I mean, we've done episodes on world building too, but they were longer ago. So, I wanted to do kind of the world building side of that, because I don't know. I think it's important. Something I want to talk about. Plus, this is another way of doing the atmosphere episode that we've also kind of done, but I also kind of wanted to do again. So.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any questions thus far?
Well, not really a question. More of just like, yeah, like the length of your backstory doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things. It's about what you have contained in and like what can be gotten out of it. And I feel like a lot of what we're talking about can also blend in with backstories, even though we're going to be focusing on world building, because usually when you make a backstory, you do some world building because you're going to be doing something that isn't going to transpire that may not transpire from the setting that's already been set up. So like if you're doing Lord of the Rings, you may be designing a new city that you're from that isn't actually in the Lord of the Rings, even though you're doing a very well-established series that has very clear rules and, you know, like how, like, you know, people are and that type of stuff, but you would do something very different. There's still going to be some world building with that. So there's some overlap there. But yeah, I agree. The length doesn't matter. I mean, I say that, but I was just talking to Trung literally last night, actually technically this morning, about how long my backstories were, and because we were talking about that paper you were mentioning about 500 words, and I was like, yeah, that's not that bad. Like my backstories, looked at a couple of them. Ingrid's was 3,000 words. Psychnosis was about 300 words, or sorry, 3,000. I'm sorry, 3,000 for each of them, not 300. I'm dumb, but yeah, it's like Like, that's a long backstory, I think, for most people, because I think it's more common for people to do, like, a paragraph to a page, considering that, like, on D&D, they only give you enough room for, like, 2, maybe 3 paragraphs at most on the character sheet.
Yeah.
And a lot of times you're just, like, you know, going to your local game store and, like, getting in a quick game, and so it's just, like, here's a paragraph of who I am, and that's really it. Which, I guess, is fine, but you want to have more... If you're going to do something short like that, it's got to be content rich. You can't just put random shit in there to make it long.
It's kind of what we've been trying to do with the imperfecting episodes, where we do like the hot spots of the character. What are the moments that really show who the character is and kind of who they are, who they were, who they want to be, kind of thing.
Yeah, you don't want to go into an interview and be like, oh yeah, you know, who am I? I'm, you know, this guy that went to school and I, you know, completed school and then I worked a few jobs and then, you know, now I'm here. You gotta tell them more than that. You gotta have like actual content, right?
Yeah, so actually,
if you do something small, you should sell yourself.
Yeah, that's actually not a bad idea for like a quick backstory. Who are you? Who were you? Who do you want to be?
Yeah, where do you see yourself the next 5 years?
Brutal. I hate that question.
Oh, but... so do I. Oh, man.
So with that, I kind of wanted to do what we just did, but talk about it in a world building context. So I wanted to start off with like world building is constructing a fictional universe. And basically, what should it do versus some of what I see, you know?
You mean what you see is like common between like other people via like Twitter and stuff like that we've seen, right?
Yeah, I mean what I've seen through like others and like listening to other people's and stuff like that.
Oh, and like other podcasts and stuff.
They're not all like story-driven campaigns or anything, but yeah. It's more of like a philosophy episode again. gaming philosophy episode. Which is super, I mean, I guess a lot of our things are, but yeah.
I mean, we actually do story-driven campaigns, so yeah, not really.
I mean, yeah. So what should it do? What should world building do? Well, I think the kind of top layer, the thing most removed from everything, is that it should provide atmospheric locales that feel expansive. And I chose those words very specifically because I think... A, atmosphere is actually a lot easier to achieve than people think. And B, I think the expansivity is one of the things where people might get a little too, like, out there, you know? Maybe not yet.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know what you mean, yeah. Because, I mean, like, some degree, you want to make the world feel like it's real and be like, oh yeah, you know, I don't know if they're gonna go this far across the planet over to this place, but you know, that place should at least have this stuff, and then you're designing that stuff. Even if they do go over that way, it's not gonna be for a long, 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 long time. You don't really need to design it, but you're going through and you're trying to do like all the bells and whistles for everything to make sure everything like coincides and works well together, which isn't necessarily needed. That's kind of what you mean, right?
Yeah. I think it even goes a little bit more than that, because so you have a place, right? Okay. And you have the basic elements of what you want to do to make that place realized, right? You maybe have music, to which I recommend crafting. I mean, I guess I don't really do this anymore because we play online and it's like really difficult to play music while having people talk over a Discord. But in person, I play music. And when I have had the time and the gumption, I tend to like to, A, make each area's music specific. And B, when I can, have different atmospherically themed playlists, which is why I don't achieve this goal often, because that's a lot of work. So the shortest way, honestly, that I found to effectively do that is to essentially pick a soundtrack for each area or like a band or something, and then kind of separate out everything into like, oh, well, this is while they're just walking around. Oh, this is when things start to feel tense. Oh, this is fight music, that kind of thing. And I think that specificity, A, it will add variety, and B, the players get tuned into kind of what's going on, and it does a lot of the like mindset creating for you. It's a lot harder to crack jokes when like intense music's going on and someone's being beaten by a club tail of a pig.
Yeah, that sucked.
Everybody got beaten by the club tail of a pig, except for
That's true, they literally jumped in front of it to try and be a hero and then fucked up.
True.
And nearly died from a critical hit of it.
True. Was it worth it?
No.
I know, that was the best. That was one of my favorite parts. That's called subverting expectations.
Yeah, anyway. Atmosphere, something that kind of like goes along with it, and I've said this before and I'm gonna go to it again, sorry, they did have another game that just came out, so I can't verify if that game is the same, but I'm talking about Metroid Dread. Super Metroid had a good kind of like, it has very good atmosphere and tone, and has different areas that feel very different just from having a completely different like soundtrack to it. And the thing that that game is well known for is its atmosphere. It does like this like stressful but yet calming music, kind of like eerie tone really well in terms of the music, but also like the visuals of each area are very different. And there's like almost no words in it. Like at the very beginning, there's like a few lines of text. Actually, I think it's like 3 or 4 paragraphs, and then that's it. So you don't necessarily have to have, you know, a really long story. It doesn't have to be like a, you know, a typical like JRPG where it's got, you know, as many words as a freaking novel in it that you have to click through. You don't necessarily have to do that.
Well, that I think I think that's also my feeds into my next idea. Have short but well chosen descriptions for the setting, and you may make that up beforehand. You may try to do that on the fly. I feel like I should write out a little bit more than I do beforehand. But Metroid also has those very simple, like each place is like slightly differently themed, and you begin to know A, what's familiar, and B, what's different, right?
Yes, true.
So that's kind of what you're looking for. You're looking for different descriptions, but also things that you're kind of, you can, if you do it right, things can feel different, but also your players will begin to expect certain things, and you can kind of play off of that.
True.
Which these things kind of combine to create an overall tone, which is more of like how you say things. Like, for instance, if I said, like, the red sun set over the beach and the red water glistened like blood. You don't quite get the dread until like the very end of that. True. Whereas if I said something like, the blood red sun set over the water, the sanguine character enhanced with each gleam and ripple. I changed the word slightly, but I also changed my tone, and you probably responded more to the tone than to the words. So
true. Yeah.
You get some of that. I know I was messing with Steve with like a character voice.
oh yes.
Last time, where one was more of like bubbly.
Did you do that on purpose?
Oh yeah. Are you kidding?
Oh, you did? Okay. Damn. I caught it. I was like, God damn.
Yeah. Cause I have one register where I kind of keep my like friendly NPCs. And then I kind of have another register for like my cocky, manipulative, little fucked up characters. And so, yeah, playing a little bit with, the register and tone there. But all that kind of goes to create an atmosphere. And you'll notice, with the possible exception of putting together playlists, that isn't planning and planning and planning and planning, right? It's not creating detailed descriptions of every little thing in this place, right?
Correct, yeah. Did you want to touch on the whole, like, writing out your speeches and stuff? We've talked about it before, but, I mean, did you want to mention that here in terms of, like, what's needed versus not needed?
I mean, I feel like we've mentioned, A, don't make them too long.
yeah, that's true.
And B, kind of like, A, you want them to be flavor bombs. I feel like most things that people add to an RP should be flavor with some explanation, because you need to describe certain things, especially if you're online and don't have a like visual map.
Oh, yeah.
We were theater like... the minding it last time, and everyone's like, okay, where am I? And I'm like, okay, you're over here, this far away from this far away from this, and they're over there and around a corner. So
yeah, I feel like if you are gonna do like writing like that. You don't necessarily have to like write exactly and choose the words like super carefully as you're writing it and be like, well, I can't think of this, you know, on the spot type of thing. Like typically you can, you might want to give it a shot at once. Like, well, I don't know if I'm going to leave it in cause it's probably going to get automatically cut. But I was going to say like, if you're going to tell a story, you don't necessarily have to like have it flow like they're watching a movie with no pauses in between. You can stop and think as you do it. I was going to say like, maybe I should leave Kevin's pauses in there, but they're probably going to get cut when I automatically do this, but I don't think I'm going to go through and specifically cut that out. But like you don't have to, you know, stream of thought it to your players when you read something like that or to like set a scene. Like you can take a moment to think and pause and it's like, hold on, give me a moment. Let them talk amongst themselves or something about something that just happened or whatnot while you get your thoughts together and kind of think it up. But if you have like the general idea of what you want to do, so you're like, okay, I want to tell them about the sunset and how it almost looks like the sun's bleeding into the sea and that type of thing. You can have that general idea and then you can just kind of figure out as you go while you play. And I feel like that's something that will help you improvise in the future, right? Would you agree?
Yeah,
disagree?
The biggest thing with improvising is to write down what you improvise so you can expand on it later.
I guess that's true.
That is the secret key. You have no idea how often I have been like, oh, you guys want to go over there? Okay. So you go over there, make up a couple things. Oh, let's take a break. Expand, move some stuff around. I feel like it is nice to have an idea of everything, but you don't need to like plan out everything. Because when you have everything planned out, it is very much sad when your players ignore it.
True. Yeah, if you put in a whole bunch of work into something and it takes you 10 hours to design, you know, this speech, and they just kind of go like, oh, okay, cool. So where's the loot?
Yeah.
It's like, oh, man.
So I've trained my players not to expect loot.
Nope, we have to go and steal it ourselves. We'll find the loot one way or the other.
They will find the loot. Yeah, which I think is getting at the feeling expansive part. And I mentioned this is where it gets tough because I think a lot of GMs really are like, no, I need to know. You need to know all about everything. And you don't. You just need to have enough ideas available that you can hang flesh on. Even if you have to like make up kind of character bios or like you pull a card. I think there's literally some people who sell like NPC cards and then you kind of theme them on the spot.
Yeah.
You don't have to have filled out a full dossier of everything in the map to make it your players feel like they could go anywhere. So
no, true.
Yeah. Like Steve, do I block off any of the map to you guys?
Yes and no, but not in the sense that most people are probably thinking of. I think in Ecliptica, at one point, you had like certain parts of it we just weren't aware of. And then you would like draw them in type of thing, which is sort of similar to what you do now. But I think it's a little bit less like, oh, yeah, you have no idea what's over there at all, whether there's anything, you know, there to begin with. And now it's more like, well, yeah, you know, like where the landmasses and stuff are here. But there's actually a city here that you didn't know about. And then you'll draw that in. And you'll add it. So it's kind of like to us, it seems like we just discovered it, but it's probably also partially, it's like, oh yeah, I want this in to be part of this session now. So I'm going to add this in, you know, the session before.
Yeah. Also we've been doing a lot of games that are just like kind of set in one city. And so literally everything's there and most of the like major areas are marked out and most of the like key points are marked out. They just often have no reason to like, you know, go over there. And I think, and we've mentioned this about GMX's game before, there was so little drive, our characters had so little connection, that it was like exploring in a video game where we're just like, I don't know, let's go find out what's over there. And that frustrated him, I think frustrated him to the point where he wanted to punish us, and did punish us.
Yeah.
But I understand the need, the desire to not, like, feeling like that is bad, especially if you're doing a story-driven campaign, because they're like, no, this isn't like a video game where you just go bust in and get some loot or whatever. You should be following a story. You should be like looking for something, even if it's something as simple as like just you're trying to find the MacGuffin But usually the MacGuffin is related to other mysteries related to your characters. If your GM's done it right, they tie together. They do the thing that you were mentioning earlier, which is making characters that two players think are different and making them the same, sort of, with a twist.
Yeah. I feel like a MacGuffin's a good way to kind of solve that problem, because to kind of like compare and contrast is that we're mostly talking about, like, you don't have to make it expansive and have like all this stuff planned out. You have know where everything is and that type of stuff. Whereas GMX had it took place in a large city, but he didn't want us to go wherever we wanted to. He wanted to have control over where we went. And that's fine. I mean, in a way, Kevin kind of does that in our noir game that we're doing, our Silent Spiral game. But he does it in a much better way. Rather than going like, oh, yeah, you can go wherever you want, but you can't go to the places I don't want you to go to. Because we didn't have anything that we were driven to do. We didn't have a MacGuffin to pull us along. We didn't have an objective. We didn't have a group thing that we needed to do, you know, like, urgently.
Baseline survival.
Yeah, it was baseline survival, and it's like, oh, but you can't go wherever you want. You have to tell me exactly where you're going. You have to know where you're going.
Yeah.
Which, like, also, I can't just walk down the street. No.
we've brought up baseline survival, and since apparently this episode is just going to be whatever I want to talk about, I do have a point that I'll eventually get to, and we're building it. But survival games, the reason, well, survival media in general, the reason why they're cool isn't because the people might die. That creates tension, and that creates interpersonal conflict, and seeing what characters will do at their extremes is why survival stories are cool. It's not just the survival part, though. It's all that layered on top of it. And that's kind of what you're trying to get at with all of this. Yes, you do have, at the very base, just task. It's the associations, the emotions, all that stuff related to task that you want to pull. And I think was good at a certain part of world building, which is providing impressive places stocked with appealing characters, right? He had, well, maybe not appealing, but they were more fleshed out. I could almost hear Steve's eye roll with that.
Yeah. My eyes did roll. Yes.
But the characters themselves were fine. They didn't want to have anything to do with us, which is a problem, but they were there, and the places, like, looked neat. We definitely wanted to explore some places. Like, we were like, oh yeah, man, we want to go to, like, Chinatown. We want to go, like, to the beach. Like, that sounds cool. Like, what could be there? And you use those places to kind of draw your players in, right? The shininess level should equal a hook or a hint at a hook, right? Maybe you go to shiny place bumps you to actual place where the adventure is going to take place or whatever. Along with, you know, neat stuff for your characters to reflect on, etc. You know, races, magics, cultures, institutions, weapons, all that good stuff. All the stuff that makes up a culture. I know cultures was in the middle there. Don't at me. But yeah. And I've mentioned all this before. If this sounds familiar, it's because a lot of it's from episode 6, where we talked about this. We talked about it, I think, 4, 5, 6. That kind of stuff. And you use the things players know and want, and they've said their characters want, and they've told you in their expectations that they want to drive them, right?
Yeah.
But I think if you just sit too long in that world building, if you just have atmosphere, places, and NPCs, and that's what you do, I think it kind of gets away. It becomes like a list. It becomes a series of things. If you give someone a deluge of information, they are going to have a little trouble picking out what's important. That's why you got to give it with the flavor bombs. You got to kind of ask yourself, how does this relate to the characters as you're planning? It'll prevent you from wasting time. And, you know, maybe not everything's a waste of time. Maybe they ignore that detail. You put it somewhere else. 'Cause that's what I do.
I do have an analogy that might help with this too, that kind of helps understand.
Yeah.
If you're going to go on a trip and you're like, okay, I'm going to get on this plane and I'm going to go fly somewhere that I've been looking forward to going, and we're going to spend a couple weeks there. It's going to be great. And you're packing your stuff, and then you're like, okay, well, I need you know, I need all this other stuff. And he's like, oh, I like to have like smoothies in the morning. So I'm going to take a blender with me because I don't think they're going to have a blender there. So I'm going to take a blender. I'm going to take this. I'm going to take that. And then now you have like 6 or 7 bags of stuff. You can't take all that. And you're not realistically going to use all that when you get there. So you need to focus on like what's important. Like, what do you really need? And you want to have it condensed. So you don't want to pack too much in. I think it's kind of like what you're getting at and to a degree too, is you want to focus on the stuff that's important. Like, you need to have your toothbrush. You need to have clothes. You need to have like maybe, you know, a couple of bottles of water. I mean, well, you can't take bottles of water on planes, but, you know, like stuff maybe like that. You need to focus on the things that you can take and that you are going to use and you are going to need on a trip, not stuff that makes like your life just more enjoyable because you need it here. You might need it somewhere else at a different point. So,
yeah,
you just got to tailor it to what you're doing.
Also, a brutal attack on my my packing of books that I clearly will not be able to read all of on vacation, but I like having
the
choices.
Did you pack a bunch of books for the vacation you can't go on now?
No. I tend to when I
vacation.
Yeah.
Brutal attack.
And I'm going to bring these 5 books and I'm going to read like maybe one on the way there and back. It happens. It's better now that I listen to more audiobooks, but,
Yeah.
Basically, as we've said before, plan events that progress the character stories, and through those character stories, they should be advancing the plot. Everyone's like, yes, you say this all the time. True. So why then would world building be overrated? Aside from wasting your time, aside from all that stuff, I think it kind of brings down to like a few basic problems that can crop up like in the game, like realistically, like not at the planning stage. The first one is kind of one Steve and I came up against recently. We talked about a few episodes ago, actually probably like 6 to 10 episodes ago. A lot of times this game information starts getting treated like game codexes, like in video games where you go and you open up the thing and then there's like a paragraph that the game designers put in there that explains something really cool. That doesn't really matter, but just kind of explains something random in the game, you know?
This is why you have a double jump. It doesn't actually matter, but you have a double jump and we need to make it make sense somehow.
Yeah. I'm not going to go on a plot hole culture rant, but I feel like anything unexplained is treated as a plot hole, and I think that's stupid. So, yeah, feel free to email me about that, roimperfection@gmail.com, because you're wrong. But if you think anything unexplained is a plot hole. Also, this kind of thing is like I feel like a lot of times it's like a GM over eagerness thing. They're just like so excited about their world that they just make. They just make a bunch of stuff. I definitely was guilty of this when I first started GMing. You're just like, yeah, I'm just going to make everything. And you don't need to. Calm down. So that's like the innocent one. This is how I usually talk about it. But the way this crops up then is oftentimes then you're giving your players like this super detailed explanation of like all their options and what everything looks like and all this stuff. And man, the players cannot find the hook. The hook is just another detail. It's gone. It is invisible amongst the foliage. It can slow things down. It can make things really clunky. Oftentimes, right, we're humans. We can only handle so many elements. It'd be like if I tried to teach multiple subjects. Well, maybe not multiple subjects at the same time, but like multiple different things. Like if I tried to explain to Steve just right now, everything about commas, colons, semicolons, apostrophes, and M dashes. Those are all part of kind of the same world, but they all have vastly different rules and are used in such different ways that by the time I finished with M dashes, Steve would have forgotten what I said about commas.
True.
I mean, aside from the fact that I've explained commas to Steve and he doesn't care.
That's also true.
But yeah, it's just too much. So you need to pull back. You need to have those flavor bombs. The next one is the lofty goal, the goal that I shoot for and miss constantly. And that is more of a Lord of the Ringsian thematic expansion. For instance, Steve, you love Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I just made a reference to it earlier, and I had no idea it was later on in this doc, but yeah, there it is. Yeah, I love Lord of the Rings.
He doesn't love Lord of the Rings.
No, I don't.
And that's because I think it's just too much, right? You don't care about the themes. You don't really care about the characters.
Yeah, I mean, it's partially that, like, it's just not my type of story in a way. Like, I mean, well, I shouldn't say it's not my type of story. It's like, there's nothing wrong with, like, the objective they're trying to do. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't fit my taste, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah. Sorry, were you agreeing with this? Go ahead.
I think that might be because he's trying to put in a lot of themes, and often that results in a lot of, like, detail that, If you're not really into it, just comes off as like other stuff. Versus if you're really into it, you're like, oh man, that's like really thematic, and it like goes with this, this, and this, and this world. But you have to be really invested, you know? Does that make sense?
I think so. Yeah. You're talking about like all like the elves having their own thing, and the dwarves having their own thing, and the hobbits having their own thing, and
how they all relate and reflect to each other and to different parts of like philosophy and the way their different societies are run, etc.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I see what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, themes are great. Do not listen to the creators of the Game of Thrones TV show that they are famously quoted as saying themes are for 8th grade book reports because they're idiots. they are. there's no other. Yeah. Never mind. Do try to have themes and do try to develop themes. Right. Of loss, of identity, of, conflict, of morality. Quite often D&D's of one or many of those things. But make sure that your characters, like, care and are down for it. Otherwise, it's just going to seem like more stuff, more other stuff. And you, like, I mean, I think the big thing with both of these earlier two, and less for the next one, is you should know what your friends like or what they're into.
True. Hopefully.
And you can take your cool stuff that you made and like paint it with the stuff they're into, right?
What would you do for a group that if you're just going to go and run a game for some people at a local game store, what would you suggest? Know these people.
Make it as cool as you can. I would literally, and this will vary because I know some people do like the official stuff, and the official stuff has a whole bunch of rules and guidelines that like,
oh yeah,
I think you have to like strictly run modules like by the book, and that just seems like a prison to me.
Some people are super by the book when it comes to stuff like that, but there's some people who aren't, that they're sort of flexible.
I mean, I think it's fine. Like we've said, hey, you want to war game this? Not our thing, but have at.
Yeah.
With other people, with people you don't know, I would say genuinely, A, try to arrange for like enough time where they're like figuring things out, and you can maybe real quick like ask them what they like and try to like slip it in when you can.
Oh, that just gave me a good idea.
Oh.
I would suggest something that we've talked about before and suggested before is if you are going to go and do a random group with a bunch of people that you don't know at a local game store, and it's not going to be more than, you know, it's not just going to be a one-shot thing. It's going to be like we're going to do like a little campaign type thing, like over the course of maybe a couple of months. Go there and have a session zero and have them make characters and have them like figure out like who their characters are and that type of stuff, and establish a theme and talk to them about a theme, and then ask them like what their likes and dislikes are and the things they like to see and the things they don't like to see, and then take that and then kind of try and incorporate at least like a few different variations of some of those things like in your notes, and then figure out which one, you know, that person likes by trial and error, I guess, throughout the campaign, and build up from there.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully you've set like a genre, like the Kami wants to a good World of Darkness game. I think to stop me and Steve from getting negative anytime we mention World of Darkness.
Maybe, yeah.
That's
yeah.
Not 100% true.
No.
I
mean, he did emphasize the word good whenever he talked about it. So, yeah.
But Steve immediately was like bringing up genre stuff. And I think that's kind of what he was missing. I think he was just considering urban fantasy and that we wouldn't question it. But I have trained my players slightly differently.
Yeah, I was gonna say the first thing I asked him was just like, so what type of themes are we doing? You know, like what type of stuff
well,
here?
And you asked
do like
genre.
Cyberpunk or? Oh yeah, I did ask genre. Yeah, yeah, but
that's genre, not themes. Themes are different.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the genre helps decide what themes are available in some cases.
Sort of. Yeah. The each genre has expected themes. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
There we go. Maybe that's what we should do. Should we do a theme, like a theme episode? That might be fun.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, we could do that.
We're not doing it the next two episodes, though. Those are already done. Not already done. We haven't already.
Yeah, I was going to say. I was like, they are? Cool.
The things are already set. We're redoing our villain episode because I didn't like last year's, so I'm doing a better one. And then we're doing a Halloween episode. And it's going to be rad because I get to talk about three things I love. And Steve gets to nod and say he likes two of them, and the other one's a really long book. So.
You're going to talk about War and Peace?
I'm not going to go on that rant. I'm not taking the bait, Steve. No. Okay. So those are kind of the innocent ways. The one that you have to look out for, and by you, I mean players, is when the world building is an outgrowth of the GM thinking that their story is the War and Peace of RPs, and that it is like better than anything you could possibly contribute to their game, and their hubris, egotism, pomposity kind of crushes anything and makes things really hard to do. So that's when they have everything planned out and you're just kind of playing with their toys. And that sucks because we should share
toys.
Yeah,
no one enjoys that.
Yeah. And at that point, I would say find an excuse to drop out of that game. Find a better GM. Unless you're into it. Maybe you're into their story. Hey, man, have at. But
Then try and talk to them about it. Help offer them ways to improve.
Yeah. They won't change. No, I joke. I'm relying too much on our one really bad example.
Yeah, I was gonna say. you can't base everything on him.
I know. But yeah. Bottom line, flavor bombs. Too much detail drowns everything. You gotta hit him with like the pinpoint. Beautiful paragraphs. Paragraphs that paint images, but still leave enough white space for them to draw their character in.
Yep, nothing sucks more than saying like, oh, this is how the setting is, and you're like, well, can I be an artificer? It's like, well, no, because technology doesn't exist like at all in this setting. It's like, but we're doing like a D&D fantasy. Why can't I be an artificer? Is there like an actual reason that makes sense? No, it's just, you know, the stuff I designed, there's no room for it. It's not a thing that's there. It's all like regular medieval
Steve,
stuff with magic.
We're doing low fantasy here.
Now, I mean, you could
now watch
could
as
do...
the cleric and the warlock do crazy magic constantly.
Yes.
There's no such thing as low fantasy D&D unless you're keeping your characters at level like 3.
Which, yeah.
Have at, but there are better systems for it.
True. Yeah. I mean, you did have a campaign that's eventually going to take place where you're not allowing clerics and warlocks and like one other class or something, right?
I might ban wizards. I haven't decided yet.
Oh, okay. But that's more of they just don't fit in the theme that's there.
Yeah. And I made that very clear up front.
True. So I can be an artificer.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Really?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm being a barbarian, but good to know. Now to convince him that I can be fairy.
I think Ryan's being a fairy for that game.
Oh, really? Wow. Okay. Well, I'm super surprised now.
Yeah, I feel like anytime I'm like, I'm going to be strict, I'm not going to allow a bunch of shit, everything's fine.
Yeah, everything's fine.
The one caveat I would say with that is definitely if you have one person who really, really has their heart set on being like this one thing, like the Dragon Book is coming out, see our episode, coming soon. Try to accommodate them, right? They really want to be a Drake Warden. Say, maybe I can work that in.
Yeah, maybe they really like Monster Hunter stories. And they're just like, you know what? I just want to have my little dragon buddy partner thing. And yeah, my little Rathalos.
Yeah. Well, I hope that made sense.
Hopefully, yeah.
I feel like I had a really clear idea about this episode 2 weeks ago. And then We had a bunch of delays. Kind of muddy,
yeah. And delays, yeah.
Oh well. I get to talk about atmosphere. Maybe I'll put that in the thing.
So to kind of summarize, your opinion on or your hot take on why world building is overrated is that a lot of times most people are going to spend too much time building up the world and doing unnecessary things, just bog down or dilute the stuff that's actually important.
Right.
Is that a good summary? Okay.
That is that. Yeah. Wow. Steve, A+.
Yes.
I'm afraid it will only help.
Easiest A I've ever gotten.
I'm afraid it will only help slightly with all these D's. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, damn it. It's that comma shit again.
It's true, man. It's true. Keep forgetting. Okay. You need a support. Or no. Now I'm fine. You need.
I was going to say, like, I'm out. I'm out. I'm not doing English lessons on this podcast. I'm out.
Steve, you need a comma and a coordinating conjunction to combine two sentences.
Okay, so that's it for our episode today. So remember to play what you love, and until next time, your characters do something epic. We're out. Bye.
All right. So, semicolon, transition word.
Run.
All right. Yeah. Have a good one, everybody. Thank you for listening. If you have any comments, questions, interjections, queries, notes, formal challenges, or suppositions, please email us at roimperfection@gmail.com. That's roimperfection@gmail.com. Or follow us on Twitter at roimperfection or Instagram search roimperfection. You can also visit our website at roimperfection.com. If you enjoyed our work, leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. Have a great week, everybody.